proper balance of actual history. If it's in there, it will help you in your learning to make better decisions. It's necessary to know the truth. And that's what it's going to be.
Are there any other questions? Well, the second part of the lecture will be a talk on Route 81 controversy. It will be given by Tim Formalines, an assistant professor at University of Buffalo, and Tim Formalines.
Well, we're pretty lucky that we have a videotape that was put together, that was photographed, and has just about come on being now. We have it set over there. The photographer and one of the people that worked so hard to do it is standing next to her. And she will run for you. It's about 20 minutes. And it pretty much will tell you about Route 81. I'll fill you in a little bit more after. But if you pay close attention to this, you'll get the idea. But for us, when we step off our reservation line, we will go to all of you. When we step over into your territory, we go according to the rules and regulations that you have. You didn't say that. You said we didn't respect them. And to us, that was missing the whole point. Route 81 for this year, I think, is done. An election year, I don't think they have the will for the fight that it would take this year, at least. When we started last year, the beginning, seven of us that went up on that road to begin. And we had nothing. We just knew that we were right. When the snow flew, and they couldn't possibly pour concrete, then we could take a rest. And they did not have a road. And that's what it was all about. We didn't want their money. We didn't want their land. We didn't want their road. And today, right now, there is no road. There will not be. Well, starting out from a very weak position, and they spend a great deal of time gauging us. They test us about every 10 years to see what kind of strength we have. It's how do they react? And they felt, by just moving in and beginning to build a road, that we couldn't fight them. And we indeed were weak at that time. But they did us a very great favor. Today, they wouldn't dare to even think of it. Brought us back together, and all our brothers. We needed it. It was a hard thing. We spent months. A lot of us weren't working. We didn't have any income. We were eating over to the mud house from provisions that were provided by other people. They were turning off the electricity, shutting off people's gas. These people didn't quit to work. They stayed up on the road to see it through. They're always ready. And you could feel it. As we were progressing through October, I remembered back early that spring, I looked down that empty road, because there were no people. And then I looked back again, and I saw these cars, and I saw these faces of all kinds of people. Not just our red brothers, but our white brothers and our black brothers. All there. On a principle. Everybody figured it was too big. But we've always known that New York State is only New York State. That we are an Onondaga Nation. Regardless of size, we function on principle. Without principle, and without us adhering to it, and doing what we believe, not just saying, but believing it and doing it, we remain strong. We give you an example to do what you have to do in your own governments and interactions with people. I think that 81 has passed for at least 2 years. And I think that this videotape pretty well puts it all together. I just wanted to say, for things that are occurring right now, we should let you know what our current fights are. At this moment, we have 4 men under heavy indictment in Philadelphia. One of our young men was shot and killed by the Philadelphia police about a month and a half ago. He was shot 6 times. 2 other young men were shot, one in the arm and one in the chest. 2 men besides that were beaten. One was still in a hospital with a back fusion. They're coming to trial on the 22nd of this month. We have to gather again ourselves, along with our other brothers, to see that they don't get away with this. We're into another whole fight. Leroy Shenandoah, the man that was shot, was a strong individual. He's one of our very best lacrosse players. And he did his share of fighting. He wasn't afraid of any man. He was also the youngest superintendent iron worker in the nation. He helped to put up the Verrazano Bridge. He raised the Madison Square Garden. He worked in all of these huge places. He's quite a man. But he was shot in about a minute and a half, helping to protect another man that was being shot. The fight, we're told, is going to be a long one. 3 to 5 years is an estimate. To move through the red tape and the bureaucracies of the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. So that begins on the 22nd. We'll be raising funds, we'll be having different things, benefits, and so forth, for these 4 boys who are under heavy indictment. They're facing a total of 28 years in prison for nothing. That's one. We have another boy, young man, named Gary Shenandoah. Right now in Fort Dix, drafted. We speak of these two tongues over and over and over again, and it just never stops. This man had been guaranteed 3 months of amnesty while we and the United States federal government and the Army and whoever else is involved figure out what are we going to do. They coaxed this young man down into the induction place, and the next thing we knew, he was in Fort Dix. Now, with the finding, again, State Supreme Court, that we are a sovereign nation. All the treaties that we have, and we have a lot, we are not citizens of the United States. We have never accepted this. We have never taken the collar or the yoke of this country upon our neck. Therefore, they have no right to take our young men. In our treaties, in all the Indian treaties, was peace treaties. Peace means don't fight. Brothers, peace. Lay down your arms. Now they want to place guns in our hands for their purpose. It's not the way we look at things. You say something and you mean it. Peace. Further, in our teachings, in our law, it says the great peacemaker would uproot this great tree of peace, and all men would throw their weapons of war into this hole, and the tree would be again planted on the top, never to be lifted. Our law that says peace. So again, we're taking on the United States Army, the federal government, Washington, D.C., Fort Dix, Syracuse Recruiting Office, Metro Post Office, I don't know who else. But we have, again on principle. And again we'll fight on principle. This is a large fight again. And we're going in it with all our brothers, all Indians. Canada, United States. Because we never drew a line there. That line that's placed there was placed by another person from another country. None of our Indian brothers ever made that line between Canada and the United States. We traveled free across this nation and across these lands. We're talking about principle. We're talking about the only thing that you have fight. The aggression and the things that are occurring right now. You talk about justice, honesty. We see very little of it. We hear a lot of talk. Now here's a fight based on those principles again. Hasn't changed. Every chief, Pontiac, Joseph, Sitting Bull, Tecumseh, these men have all said the same thing. Give us peace so that we may raise our children in our accustomed manner. They didn't say give us war. They said peace. Every one of those men. They're noted for their warriors' ability. They're noted for their fighting ability. But only because that's all they had left to do. The last resort, as it is in our councils when we speak. The last resort. Yes, we can fight. We can fight. But only when there's nothing left. In a great turmoil now, your country. The fabric of this society is thin, worn, pulling apart. Education, cities, people. You think you have a problem now? 30 years from now, when your populations have doubled, you see your problem. You have to look ahead. You have to think about your grandchildren. You have to think about your great-great-grandchildren. And what are you going to leave to them? And how are they going to survive? This should be your concern. This is our concern. This is what we think of. This is what guides us. Our children. So with the winning of one fight and the battles, I don't know how many more are going to come, but I know we're going to get them. We'll be here to fight and work with and find one another. To help each other, because eventually that's what it amounts to. We're willing. We've always been willing. And now we have some help. So again, like we said the other night, I was glad to be here. Thank you for coming. Yeah, they were having a movie. A movie was being made next to their hotel. They're out on the balcony. The movie was being made right in the street below them. And the police that were down on the streets had asked them to get off the balcony. And since they weren't in the way, they saw no reason to get off the balcony, so they didn't. They were interested in seeing this movie being made. Somewhere, further down in the hotel, someone threw a mattress out the window. And the police charged up into the hotel and came out onto that balcony. And a minute and a half later, one man was dead, two more were shot. Simply, that's how it was. They're being charged with assault, aggravated assault, assault and battery, conspiracy, inciting to riot, and every other thing that they could put on us. Every Indian that was around available was grabbed up and put into jail without a lawyer, without being able to call out, some for as long as 18 hours. Say nothing of the fact that after they had shot this man, he was not given medical attention at all for an hour and a half. He was brought down dead. He was also brought down beat up after being shot. It was a very simple thing. It was one of those, there was no more than that. No depth to it, no reason. An occurrence. But our men, our iron workers, go all over this country. And they spend all week working in this other society. And then they come home on the weekends. And the least that they can expect when they're out doing that is some protection. This is all we're saying. And we want to get those Philadelphia police. Those two men that shot them. Those boys. So again, it's another big fight, but I don't think that they quite realize who they're fighting with either. But we'll stick with it. We'll go with it all the way. Any other questions?
I hate to break the somber mood, but what's your definition of assimilation?
The fellow over there in a red shirt. I don't know. Assimilation is, I guess it's a word that we hear all the time, and it has a negative connotation to it with us. Assimilation to us means annihilation. It's not assimilation, it's annihilation. We look at it and use terms like coexist, which I think is better. As in our two or wampum, it states, you have your canoe and we have our canoes. You won't interfere with yours, you won't interfere with ours. And we'll both go down the same river. Brothers, same respect. That's not assimilation, I guess that's coexist. No. We do not vote. It comes up, like now, this young fella. He signed the papers there. They said, "Where do you live?" He says, "I live in Onondaga Nation." You're an American citizen? No. Iroquois citizen. They crossed that out on his paper. And he lives in Netru and he's a citizen. It's important that we keep these differences.
Did he have like a draft card or something? Or?
Yeah, he registered.
What? Would he not exist?
Well, because when you're in high school, you get these pressures and people just don't know any better. That's all. We tell them not to register, but they do. It's a mistake of a young person. You can't wait. We'll fight for him on principle.
Isn't it true that a person that's not a naturalized citizen of the United States also has to register for the draft? They're also liable to the draft. I think it's my understanding.
Yeah, they get them. They get them.
Yeah, you're talking about somebody that comes from Italy or Germany or any place like that. Yeah, they are. And I guess by their coming over to this country and joining into your society, they're asking for it, are they not? We have our own territory. If I were to go downtown and live in Syracuse and not come back to my reservation, then I would sign for that draft. See what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not coming to Onondaga Nation. For instance, if these people were coming to Onondaga Nation and we were to take them in for one reason or another, and they came under our wing, we'd tell them, don't register for the draft.
So you're saying the difference is they came to our court and you were here first.
Well,
you didn't choose to.
Right. Well, in 1910 and 1900, many Indians had to buy a hunting license that cost $25. When our white brothers was buying a hunting license that cost $5. Now, why was this? Well, the hunting license that the Indian brother had to buy had the word alien on it. They had gone so far as to say that we were alien. And in your own definition of the word, alien means to come from some other place. It's a long circle. But basically what we are is we are an individual nation. We coexist, we've been allies, we help. And I'm sure if we were to be attacked, we'd react like we always have and stand for our territories. But we see no reason to be over it in across the water. And to us, there's no point to this. I don't understand why they're over it.
I agree with you that you shouldn't, that you, young men shouldn't be drafted. But what do you say to the people who say, well, in 1924 there was an act of Congress that made Native Americans citizens, made all American Indian citizens of the United States? Do you say, well, we didn't accept that? Or what is your reply?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, Six Nations went right down to Washington and told them, not us. We're on record. Every time they've done something like we said, oh, no. Thanks anyway. But further than that, no one, this country has no laws that I know of, anyway, to make a Canadian citizen an American citizen. Or a French citizen, an American citizen. Can they force citizenship upon these people?
Force them to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that's different. See, they got a brother right on
their citizens, but they cannot vote for elections. But they can go to Vietnam.
Right. But what I'm saying is, they don't have anywhere in their laws the right to go to another nation and make them something else. You have to look pretty hard to find that. So that this act, this forced citizenship of 1924, is in fact illegal. Unless these people wanted it. And there were many Indians that did want it, and fine. But for the Six Nations, for us, never. Never. And we've refused it over and over and over again. 1934, 1948, 1950, 1952, 1956, and today, we're on record. We have too much students. We're still a free country. Any more?
Was Gary Lee Shandro living on the reservation when he was drafted?
Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't touch him. If he had not gone down there and been tricked into going down there. Oh, is that the petition? A draft petition here. You want to sign it? Tabor, Gary. If he had not gone down there, they wouldn't have been able to even come out and get him.
Does he want to come back?
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't want to be
back. In the world to come back.
He's willing to be this test case. There's a lot to risk. We have this personal freedom that if, for instance, any one of our young men wants to join, then he has that complete freedom. Go ahead and do it. But we say that nobody can. The basis of our society is total freedom for individuals.
Like, if you can join the foreign legion, that doesn't make you a French citizen. Well, if you're drafted, they're saying that we're citizens. If he went without a fight, then he would be admitting that he's a citizen. And we just can't let it go any longer. You know? We've got a lot of people out there, but never on the principle that we were Six Nation Indians and not citizens. Got them out because of, they didn't read him his rights when he signed up or anything. Anything but that he was an Indian. They won't give us that. So I guess this time we're going to wring it out of them. I don't know what's going to happen. You want to add something?
I just wanted to say that, you know, the meeting, what we've conveyed back and forth, and very strong, create very strong feelings. I just want you to know that there are times when, of course, we're among ourselves, the humor is almost unbelievable. And in time of the very most serious crisis time, the Indian people will laugh, because it's good to laugh. I've got to relate two very quick things here. This last week, Leon Shenandoah and I went down to Fort Dix to talk to Gary and his commanding officers there. And we were talking with the chief of staff. And it took us quite a while to get to the chief of staff. We had to start with a private, and they went to a corporal, and then to a sergeant. And we finally got to the chief of staff. And as we were leaving, the man did help us to get to what we wanted to do there. And Leon Shenandoah, who is a Tododaho, the head chief of all the Iroquois, he called this commanding officer a sergeant. And it had quite an impact on the people around this commanding officer, you know, because as he walked to the door, Leon said, "Thank you, Sarge." The guy didn't know what to do, you know, he couldn't react to this. And then just about a couple of days before then, in one of our council meetings, we were trying to decide, or we were trying to make things right, because we have crowded things together, our fight for various things. And at the same time, we have to maintain our ceremonies on the reservation within our own community, within our society. And we were trying to put too many things together, and it was not an argument, but we were trying to just do things right. And so we had to call the clan mothers in one night. And we were going to have a ceremony and a Six Nation meeting and another ceremony all at the same time. And some people felt we couldn't do it because, you know, things have to be done slowly among the Indian people. You can't push everything together. And they were debating back and forth, saying, how can we do it? Can we do it? Trying to recall the great law. And one of the speakers stood up and says, well, maybe we better call Bill Felton. Bill Fenton, he can tell us how to do this. Here was something, you know, even in the very most earnest and important times, we find a place to laugh and to find some happiness. So, and even in the middle of that Route 81, there were many times when the crisis was, there was a tremendous possibility of a physical confrontation. And there were many times when the degree of seriousness was at its zenith. But yet there would be things that would be said and everybody would laugh. And we were there in a very serious vein at that time. And so tonight we carried things to you probably that will motivate some strong thoughts on your part. But the way I feel when I come to a meeting like this is that when I leave here, if somebody isn't mad at me, I haven't been successful somewhere. If someone isn't mad at me or mad at the state of New York or somebody, then I haven't been successful. But at the same time, I'm sure that Chief Lyons also feels the way that the purpose of coming here, of course, is to sensitize you to the fact that we are a sovereign nation, that we intend to exercise this sovereignty. And it seems, with all due respect to the chiefs that were before us in our council, their passiveness is gone, because
we still have some of the older chiefs who I have the highest respect for, like Taradaho, like Chief Paulus, like Chief Henhawk. These are the older chiefs. They were there a long time ago. But for some reason, it seems like Chief Lyons and Chief Paulus and Chief Lazor are a different brand of kind of people. We don't wait for the state of New York to come back and make things right. If we want them to do something, we go to them. Among the older chiefs, this was impolite because we were infringing on their civil rights. To, for example, like the very first time a school proposal was presented there, Commissioner Nyquist, who was the deputy commissioner, then told this chief, I'll be back to you within a couple of weeks with an answer. Well, 2 years later, nothing ever happened. There was no answer at all. But this time, when we took the proposal there, we'd give them, they said 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, one of us would be directed, write a letter or call that man and tell him his 2 weeks are up and we're ready to do business with him. And so it's changing a little bit. But yet, of course, in the back of our minds, we are controlled by the laws that were given to us many years ago, the laws of peace, and the laws that have governed our people to exhibit a high degree of integrity. And many times this law of integrity forces us not to become violent, not to do things the way people do things to us. And so it puts us at times seemingly at a disadvantage. And like Chief Lyon says, the only thing we have sometimes is the fact that we know that we are right. And very gradually as we communicate with people like you, some of you begin to realize that we are right. And of course, we need your help.
Recycling conserves water at the plant for use again, but eventually the water evaporates and the brine is collected in settling ponds. Not a drop of the polluted water can be returned to the river. The Mojave is more efficient than older plants, converting 40% of the coal's original energy to electricity. The rest is lost as heat going up the stacks and into the cooling water. After other losses, including losses in transmission, about 33% reaches consumers in Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Las Vegas at the end of this man-made energy chain. Energy growth. It's out of sight. The United States, with only 6% of the world's population, consumes about 33% of the world's energy. And our electric power requirements are growing at the rate of 8 to 9% a year on the average, doubling every 10 years since 1950. And for what? Well, one example of how this power is being used is Las Vegas, with its sidewalk air conditioning and its spectacular neon lights. Las Vegas eats up 5 times more kilowatts per person than the national average. Burning coal is one way to meet this demand for power. The question is, can we afford to dig up the West just to satisfy our energy habit? This is the biggest bargain you've got going for you. It waits on you hand and foot, but it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. It comes on at the click of a finger, does its job cleanly, efficiently.
We came here, we worship Mother Earth on its altar. We love her. We pray to the sun who gave us light. We lived without electricity. We lived without all the modern so-called conveniences like television.
Before I forget, my wife is going to call me tomorrow at 7:30.
Can opener.
So, no, at night. So on the phone, I'll answer that.
We lived in harmony with our God. Our deity.
The contract was signed in 1964, long before Peter McDonald became tribal chairman. He questions its terms.
The power development on the Navajo reservation or near Navajo reservation certainly gives the Navajo people some concern, gives us, the leaders of the Navajo tribe, some concern, and that it not only creates a pollution that everyone is talking about, but on the other hand, there are other matters that we, the Navajo people, want to consider. Is it wise for the tribe to continue to let outsiders use its resources in return for a small sum received for royalties? And also a handful of jobs, if we are to continue just to let our resources be utilized in this manner, I'm afraid that 30 and 50 years from now, we'll be in worse shape than we are today. We have groups that are very strong against the pollution of the land and the development of the power plants in the area, and there are those who are strong for employment of the Navajos for any kind of development.
And there's another one.